how did you start to develop your sound?
It happened by chance. When I was studying in Cape Town, I was just wasn't listening to music because I'm a fan of music.
Yes. First.
But I don't know why that happened because I love music, but I wasn't listening to music for the first few years of my studies. And I would just find a way to express myself, whatever ideas that I had, something, because I would listen to myself. I'd listen to whatever that I wanted to express because that's what my music is about. And then I realized it later that actually that really helped me, the fact that I wasn't listening to music, but it wasn't by choice. I don't know what it was. And then years, because for me it took at least like a good 10 years before I could say, okay, sure,
yeah,
now I can release music, now I can produce.
Creatives who live their art deserve to be heard. This is the philosophy behind Creative Allies, a podcast from the V&A Waterfront Artist Alliance program. For these conversations, we invite experienced creatives to share their stories as a gesture of allyship to emerging creatives, lending their support, advice, and encouragement. Hi, I'm your host, Lerato Sokulu.
And I'm your other host, Carol Williams. It's so good to have you with us today. Yes.
It feels like it's been long.
Since our...
Yeah,
our last confession.
What have you been up to?
Nothing.
Confess.
Nothing
confess.
Terrible. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
But today we're going to be talking about a really interesting topic. Tell us what we are going
to
be tackling today.
How to find your style and develop your personal brand. Do you know what your personal brand is?
So we were having this conversation before the recording.
Yeah.
Like, what is a personal brand?
Yeah.
And I think for me, it's how I've defined it for myself is more what I put out into the world. And for me, that is storytelling, sound and music and people. Like, I love people. I love working with people.
Yeah.
So anything that has those three things, I'm good. You know, and that's looked like lots of different things over my career.
Yeah.
And I guess that has also like developed a look and feel, you know, because that's also got to do with
yes.
the brand. But yeah, like what does it mean to you?
A lot of my brand is look and feel. I think for...
And your laugh.
A couple, definitely part of my brand. I think for a very long time, it was only look and feel. And people associate me with colors of the rainbow of every kind and looking weird, which I kind of tied into my personal brand. But now that I'm more mature, as the Americans would say,
mature.
I think, yeah, same with me. Storytelling, I'm really intrigued by the psyche of human beings and what leads them to do the things they do. I don't know if that can be a brand as such, but I've become a very serious person.
By the sounds of it, yeah.
So that's exactly what today's episode is about, defining your personal brand. Have you ever had a friend that says, oh, that's on brand for you? And what does that mean? You know, most creatives during the course of their careers will have to formulate and market some sort of personal brand. How do you make sure what you're contributing feels fresh and original and unique to you? Basically, how do you stand out in a crowd of other amazing people? To help us explore these questions, we've invited Rusita Vassin and Mandisi Mafu to share their thoughts. Rusita, you're a co-founder and designer of Ananta Design Studio. Together with your sister Viveka, your studio creates functional, with emphasis on the fun, art and joy-filled homeware and furniture. Ananta was a Creation Africa Top 12 finalist, which recognizes, boosts and supports creative and cultural entrepreneurship. And you now have a multidisciplinary space in Cape Town. Thank you so much for joining us today, Rusita.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to experience with you all today.
And we are also joined by Mandisi Mafu, a.k.a. Digital Sangoma, an independent Afro-electronic music producer and performer. Mandisi, you're also a qualified sound engineer and electronic music programmer. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to this conversation.
I actually thought that you were an actual Sangoma when I first heard of you.
Yes.
Tell us about your early career and how you started getting into music.
Whoa, that's really difficult to put. But You know, I've always been into music, you know, growing up in Eastern Cape as a young boy, music has always been a fascination. And I started off as a dancer, like every other kid in the village, a small place called Paddy. I never really saw myself doing anything else but music. And then later on, when I was doing matric, I think 2 years before my matric, I met someone in my village who then spoke to me about sound engineering, which I knew nothing about.
Yeah.
So imagine a boy from a village, and then there's somebody comes to you and say, oh, why don't you do sound engineering? Because you really like this music thing. And then from there, I never looked back. And then many years later, then I find myself in Cape Town, and then I studied sound, and then I was producing, making music in my home for many years before I could even release, because this thing, when you start to, when you dabble into art, you try to do as everything. Many things as you can, because you're influenced by this and by so-and-so, and up until a point you get to a stage where you find your voice, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so that's like a shot.
Basically, someone opened up this whole world to you.
That's a summary of my story. And
okay. Rusita, how did you get into design? Take us through the early days before you knew that you would own a design studio someday.
Creatively, my sister and I were always drawn to like art, design, experimenting. Growing up as children, like our mom was also very creative with cooking. So I think that creative flair was always in our family. At school, I was more academic. My sister was more art inclined. But we both went to Frankie Way Art School, which is now called Peter Clark. And I think that drew it out of both of us. And we felt like this was who we naturally are. Like this is our innate talent.
Yeah.
And then after school, I studied graphic design. And Viveka studied fashion design. And we both worked in the industry for some time. I for about 7 years. She worked for about 4 years.
I want to know who's the oldest.
She's actually older.
She's two years older than me. Okay.
But because we've always been best friends and in sync on everything we do, we have the same creative interests, the same like visions, that we're excited about the same things. We always knew we would do something together one day. We just didn't know what it would be.
Yeah.
Just before lockdown, we started a business where we would travel to different destinations and source handmade accessories, decor, and fashion. We went on our first buying trip to India. It was amazing. Yeah, we had the best time. We got back here. It was lockdown.
Oh, my goodness.
And our shipment had arrived. And I thought, there's no way, like, I'm going to get on a plane again. This business isn't really going to develop. So we reassessed everything. And it was during lockdown and this time of, like, thinking about, what do we really want to do? Who are we really? It seems so weird to say this now, but it struck us that we are both designers.
Yes.
We both love design. Why are we sourcing products when we should be designing?
Making,
And if you think about it now, it's like, it's so obvious. But we were on a different track. But then this time of like experimenting and exploring during lockdown, because we were both at home, not working, had this time. And I think from when we were in India, we were so inspired by all the craft. It's used across different disciplines. And when we came back to Cape Town, we still carry that inspiration. And we saw the bead artists, wire artists on the corners of Cape Town. And we saw the untapped potential. And we were like, there's really an opportunity to reimagine the craft that's here and to create more functional pieces, not just decorative. And also a way for us to support local communities, which is very important for us, because with whatever we were going to do, we knew we wanted to create an impact and for this business to be not just about us, but about our community.
Yeah.
Community is like a very important aspect in Indian culture as well as African. Yeah. So it's those two coming together.
I love that. Yeah. What I'm getting from both of you is that when you started out, there was a lot of experimentation going on, and you were
trying things, and
trying things. And we often don't talk about how long it actually takes a creative to define that, okay, this is my strongest talent and this is what I'm going to focus on. Carol, for you, how long did it take you to define that?
I mean, it's still ongoing, I think, but definitely a good 10 years.
Yeah.
Around about. And obviously training before that, you know, again, it depends on your discipline. But yeah. I think for a lot of us, like we've been building the skill set from long time ago, you know, school days. So
basically, I was about to say, since you know, when primary school, probably you start to discover what you're most likely going to be as an adult. Mandisi, so now you're in Cape Town and you're a music programmer and you are learning how to play with all these sounds and work with music. When does it hit you that you yourself are a musician?
I've always known. I mean, like I said, you know, going into studying a sound engineering was because I knew that there was nothing else that I could do better than making music.
Mm.
And so me going to study sound was so that I could get the skill set that is required so I'm able to express whatever it is that's within me. And that's always been there. There was never a point where I felt like, oh, actually I'm a musician.
Yeah.
There's never a time where I discovered that. It just always been there.
Yeah.
And I just knew that this is what I want to do, but for me to do it the best possible way that I can, so I need to invest in myself and find ways and find the tools that means going to study. And so, yeah, that's what I did.
So I think what I'm trying to get at is there's so many music genres.
Yes.
And yours is quite unique and has a lot of fusion involved. I can't actually define your sound when you hear it. How did you start to develop your sound?
It happened by chance. When I was studying in Cape Town, I wasn't listening to music because I'm a fan of music first.
Yes.
But I don't know why that happened because I love music, but I wasn't listening to music for the first few years of my studies. And I would just find a way to express myself, whatever ideas that I had, something. I would listen to myself. I'd listen to whatever that I wanted to express because that's what my music is about. And then I realized it later that actually that really helped me, the fact that I wasn't listening to music, but it wasn't by choice. Mm. I don't know what it was. And then years later, because for me, it took at least like a good 10 years before I could say, okay, sure.
Yeah.
Now I can release music. Now I can produce. The most important thing, I was sitting there for hours and hours and hours and hours for days. I remember this one year, maybe like I could count days in which I wasn't in the studio. So I was always in the studio because I loved it.
Yeah.
Which I still do. Mm. And that really helped me develop my voice. And obviously then at some point then I started listening to music and I started remember because what really influenced me is music I grew up listening to.
Mm.
So trying to, not really music from the radio, but also that, but back home in Eastern Cape, there's all these ceremonies that would take place every weekend or every holiday. And the music that came from that, women chanting, the boys chanting in the celebration when the boys going up the mountain.
Yeah.
All of that, you know, there's a lot of rhythmic, there's a lot of chants, there's a lot of, I don't want to say spiritual, but
music is spiritual. Mm. It is.
Yeah,
it has the power to bring you back from a dark place. Yeah,
but you know, with all of that, with all that influence, so I would then, because the technology that I was exposed to, I wanted to use my technology to actually translate whatever I was hearing, whether it was from back then at home or at that particular point. I've always wanted to, you know, if I feel it, I have to translate it into something that you can then hear. So.
Speaking of you not listening to music while developing your own sound, actually, I was listening to an interview with Missy Elliott and those days when they were coming up and they were in some sort of boot camp where they actually were encouraged not to listen to other musicians so that they could develop their sound. It's a thing that happens a lot with musicians.
It's amazing how you almost instinctively knew that.
Yeah, I don't know how it happened, you know, but I'm so grateful that it did. You know, even now when I produce music, I turn off.
I also
I switch off everything else, and then
I don't watch a lot of comedy.
Because also then I guess you never, like, it's so easy to copy something
and
you won't even realize.
Yeah, you'll think you'll hear a story maybe 2 months and you forget about it, and then you'll suddenly have this idea, and then you'll think it's yours, but No, actually, you saw someone.
Saw someone else.
Cool. Rosita, also, same question. You and your sister come back and it's COVID. How does the design studio come about? We know that, you know, you wanted to do a lot of work with your community. But when I look at the pieces that you make, they are so unique and so beautiful. How did you guys merge to create, you know, the stuff that you make?
So during this lockdown time, we were really experimenting and playing, and we didn't have the answers. We didn't know exactly what we were going to do, what it was going to be. But I think something came back to beads, and I think it has something to do with our heritage. Mm. In Indian culture, in Indian garments and fashion, there's so much embellishments, details, and beads, and everything's very colorful. Everything's about celebration. So I think those key points stayed with us, that we wanted to create something that was colorful, joyful, celebratory, evoked emotion in people.
Mm.
So we actually thought we would go down the fashion line. But I think because we saw the gap in the market in homeware and functional homeware and decor, and something that was really playful and imaginative and pieces that had a lot of personality.
Mm.
So we were drawn to that, I guess. And the first designs were side tables, table lamps, vases, pendants, all of them beaded. We had no knowledge about electricals, no knowledge about product design or industrial design. So looking back, the fact that those were our first products still is quite crazy to us. But I guess it came from experimenting and playing and pushing the boundaries of what we saw was out there already. So with beadwork, we didn't see a lot of functional beadwork.
Yeah.
So that's something we were excited about and wanted to reimagine.
Yeah. Mm. What were some of your challenges? Obviously, starting a business is not
easy. Especially during COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, in the early days of your design studio, what were some of the challenges that you faced and how did you overcome them?
The biggest one was having no network. So I come from graphic design industry.
Yeah.
Viveka comes from fashion. We are now in the product design and industrial design space. We have zero network, zero relationships. We don't know the right suppliers. We don't know who to reach out to. We have nothing to start with.
Yeah.
That was a really big challenge. And we've overcome it and still working on that. Attending design events, broadening our network, building relationships with customers and designers. Mm-hmm. And especially in Cape Town, there's so many events like Decorix, Cape Town Furniture Week, Design Week South Africa, there's Art Fair. And so attending these things really helps us connect. And also there's so many studio and factory visits that take place during like these design weeks.
Yeah.
And that's where we found we get to connect and we get to learn. Yes. And the design community, it's open and it's sharing.
Sure, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's been really amazing to be part of the space where we feel like we can totally reach out to people who are more experienced and they will gladly.
So networking was the key to unlocking
this
world that you were entering into.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the first piece is that sold from your business or not really?
I think it was the Purna vase.
Okay.
It's a beaded vase which has layers on both sides and a test tube.
I was thinking that one because that's the one that caught my attention immediately because I have had to admit that I'm not a plant mom. I have killed...
How many?
I didn't buy a lot, but it's pretty hard to kill a cactus and
I've also done that. I've also killed a cactus in my life.
So,
oh, wow.
When I saw that design...
We are bad people.
I'm a real mom in real life, to actual human babies.
There we go. Yeah. Yes. And they're alive.
Right.
So
hopefully.
Yeah.
What really drew me to that piece also is that I had never seen a vase like that, and it attacked all the elements that I would want as a person who actually doesn't have real plants in the space. And I was like, wow, that is super creative. And I've never seen that before. Your challenges, Mandisi? Because again, you also have unique music. So entering into a space, like you said before, where people were like, oh, this is not how you're supposed to play a bass, or it's not supposed to sound like that. What were your challenges entering the music industry and how have you overcome them?
I think the music industry is so broad in so many ways. There's so many avenues. And I think one thing that stands out whenever someone asks the question is, I think it has to do with me as an artist, the expectations that I have. I think expecting people to open doors for you, that can be very detrimental.
Mm.
You know, you come into the industry and you think you're good enough, or everybody else around you, or you think your product is good, and then you go and try to network. Because I mean, it's so refreshing to hear from your industry that there's a lot of people that that
will
open doors. There's a community, and rightfully so. I think what that taught me was that the most important thing in this industry is that you really have to build your own and find your team and find people around you, because these people that you claiming that are doorkeepers, they actually build something from the base.
Yes.
And when you are new, when you don't understand how the industry works and what it takes, because it's a business.
Mm.
And these people have found a community of people that they trust, that have invested their resources and time into building whatever it is that they have. So me coming in and thinking that, oh, I should be on that stage. Mm. I should be on this label. I should be that.
They owe me this.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that still, it's a challenge for many of us, but that was a biggest challenge for me. But what it taught me was that, you know, you need to really reinvest and invest in yourself and build something for yourself. Because I come from a very DIY approach, do it yourself.
Yeah.
And that has taught me also, when I then go and speak to these people that have found these businesses, these opportunities that they've created for themselves, then it's easy to have a conversation. It's easy to relate. And I don't go with an expectation, because what gets you into that room, into that stage, is what you do. It's the product that you create.
Yeah.
And obviously the people that support you, they're the most important people apart from yourself creating the work. So I think having expectations and not really understanding what the industry looks like and what it means to actually build a sustainable business.
Mm.
And that then has helped me understand that, okay, if I'm having a conversation with someone, it's without any expectation. It's purely because, you know, I love what they do, and I can learn from it, you know, to develop my own circle, to develop my own business. Yeah, I hope that answers your question.
It does. Mm-hmm. Sidetrack a little bit. Mandisi releases these reels on Instagram.
Yes.
And I think it's your kitchen or your living room, but he's got this massive piano and all kinds of instruments. Do you have a personal life outside of that? Because it's right where you should be eating, but there's this big, massive piano that you are on almost every morning.
I do have a personal life. Okay. It stays personal. It stays personal.
Not on Instagram.
No.
Speaking about personal, so we are obviously today speaking about branding, your studio. How did the branding for that come about? What is your brand, Rusita, and alongside with your sister?
Big question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'll start with our name.
Okay.
So the name of our studio is Ananta Design Studio. Ananta is a Sanskrit word, which means infinite and endless.
Mm,
we chose it because it reflected how we feel about design and creativity, that the possibilities are endless, and that what we create, there isn't really a beginning and there isn't really an end. It will just continue. And also, it's how we approach the way we design products, is that we create them for them to be cherished forever.
Mm.
So heirloom pieces that you put a lot of energy and handmade love into, and then that gets passed down through your families. Mm. So that cycle too.
What heirlooms has your mom passed down to you? Because I know you like to borrow a lot from her wardrobe.
Yes. So fashion, that's the first thing. But she's got a lot of Indian jewelry that she's had from her
childhood,
her life. Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, mostly fashion.
Okay. And what is...
Can I just ask you a follow-up question there? Like, how have you guys thought about positioning your brand? Like, you know...
Yes.
Yeah. How have you gone about that?
It's been an interesting process because what we feel is our edge or our difference is that we have this cross-cultural heritage. So we're born in South Africa, but our roots are from India. So for us, it's we see a lot of similarities between the two cultures and the two continents. Like both have this vibrancy, use of color, patterns, but it's how, like, how do we find our unique space to express a cross-cultural heritage? I find Indian culture is not very well known here.
I'm from Durban, so
I'm
well acquainted.
But I think growing up, even people not being able to pronounce our names properly, people not knowing what Diwali is, what our cultural festivals are, there isn't a general idea of what it is that you as a person, what's unique, or what your culture is. And growing up, I think we felt like it's not something we can share very openly. And with our brand, we've embraced this idea that we need to, it's what makes us unique. It's our voice. We need to embrace that. And so all our pieces have a Sanskrit name or some spiritual, and you shied away from the spiritual aspect, but for me, I think it's quite an important part of our brand. And I think it's great to share some of these things that are a little bit more personal, have that aspect to it. So does that answer your question?
Absolutely.
I suppose when it comes to spirituality, we're not talking about religion. I think that's why some people tend to shy away from that. How I think of it is that we're all spirit beings. And no matter where in the world you come from, we are all tied by blood. We all come into the world the same way. And so we are all, in fact, spiritual, if you look at it in that sense.
For me, creativity is an expression of that spirituality. You know, this almost this innate thing. And I think both of you have spoken about that. And it's something I've thought a lot about. Is what the same with you, where it's, you know, these things come through when you're really young.
Yeah.
You know, and
you know already.
And when you're really young and you're a kid and you're doing all of these things, you don't have personal judgment. You don't have this thing of like, well, you know, I shouldn't do this, or this isn't going to earn me money, or this is like weird or whatever. You just do it. And I always think like that is such a good determiner of what your core like self is, you know, and in terms of the things that you end up, I often find when you speak, especially to creative people, because they've often done the work to kind of figure it out, you can always draw this line. You're like, what games did you play as a kid?
Yeah.
Like, what were you doing when you were?
It all informs,
you know, it
your
kind of
self.
All informs it and it kind of comes through.
Yeah.
And so I love that link between spirituality and creativity, because I think that is such a big source of, of that thing. Yeah.
Digital Sangoma. Branding for you. What is your brand and how did you define your brand?
It's always a tough question to answer, but I never really take time to even try to figure that out. As it stands, I can't really answer that question.
Okay.
I think I don't really focus on myself as a brand. I don't see myself as a brand. What I am is an artist, someone that really loves music, that happens to find a way to express whatever he's going through. And I'm not a storyteller. I basically channel whatever it is that I'm feeling through music that people can then share. And what I've done over the years now is, especially over the past couple of years, is to identify exactly where I want to go. I think that's where then branding comes in, but I haven't really thought of it in that way. These are the spaces where I want to go. This is the music that I want to share, because I also started DJing. When you start to DJ, because this music that you love, but you don't really get to share this music when you're playing your own sets. And then that's when it came from, with me starting to DJ. And then it opens up a whole different world for me. Then I then try to position myself in like, that's when the Afro Kitchen came about, because there's these places where I want to go and play. And then it also informs the way in which, because generally when I make music, I'm just so free. But even within being free, I find that now I have to sort of like try to contain it, because there's this box, but it still stays within the sound that I've developed over the years.
Yeah. So you position yourself, which I think when you enter the creative space, you might not be able to define your brand as such because you do so many things, but you can definitely position yourself and be in spaces that will accommodate what you do and find people that are interested in what you do. And you won't appeal to everyone, I think, most importantly.
Yes, not everyone is your audience. Yeah. And that's actually
you have to find your people.
Yeah.
But also it starts with you defining what your goal is and where you want to go. Where do you want to take this music? Because as much as, you know, I channel what I feel, because if I stay in that, because it's a business for me as well.
Yeah.
You know, so trying to balance everything else with the business, with being creative, with being in the studio. So sometimes I just have to say, okay, this is where I want to go. And these are the people I want to talk to. And therefore, then these projects that I'm working on over the past 2 years, they have to fit in within this box while they still represent who I am as an artist. And still, I haven't lost my voice.
Yeah.
So when I come into a space, people should know, because what you want to do, there's so many musicians, there's so many artists. You don't want to be booked because you're filling up lineup. You want to be booked because people want to experience what you have, like, for instance, when they buy your piece, they either want to show their friends or they want
the sentimental value.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I think I'm blessed enough to have that. So now it's a matter of trying to define it so that it's aligned with the goal itself, where I want to go. And so I don't know if that answers
it. It does. Mm. Tell us one of your goals that you haven't reached yet.
Is it private?
Rejected.
Okay. Give us a goal that you had maybe 5 years ago that's manifested.
I think one of the goals was to become like an international artist where I get booked from my place. But first is to do this for a living and have a comfortable life.
Yeah.
Because I worked a 9-to-5 for many years. And one of the biggest goals was for me to do what I do without chasing the money, so that when it's good enough, it drags me out of my 9-to-5 up to a point where I say, what's the point? Let me just go. And then that became my reality. And then I do it, you know, without any stress. And I still feel like, you know, I'm not making music so I can make money. You know, and it's such a blessing to be able to do that, where the music itself is taking you out of your 9-to-5 and it's still like really offer you these opportunities. And one was to become this international artist where I get booked from my home in South Africa.
Yeah.
I get taken overseas, I get taken outside the country, and these are things that are happening. And these
are
not
by chance.
I feel
like we should have a moment of like, how amazing is that?
I think the most important thing I would like to highlight in that, it goes back to the goal itself, because these are not by chance.
Yes.
Because I sat down at some point, I said, okay, this is where I want to go. These are the stages where I want to play. These are the people I want to connect. So everything that I started doing from that point, from every day, from the music, from every week, from every month, has been a calculation of the. So when these things fall into place and
it's not by chance.
It's not by chance. It's exactly what, and the more I think about it, especially of late, I was, whoa, these things are really happening. And there's a saying that we have with my friends that I work together with: work does the work. You know, but you must have that goal, then apply yourself. And you see it just falls into place. It's just
you've done the hard work, so you actually have something to showcase. You know, because you can make those connections, but then if you don't actually have the work and you don't have the history of the work, then you can't make the most of those opportunities. And
very true.
What is a small thing that you do that has a big impact on your creativity? Something you do every day?
Every morning, I have a breathwork and meditation practice. It's a 1 hour spiritual time for myself. Viveka does the same. And if we are traveling, sharing a room, we would do it together. So it's something that is also, we can connect and relate to each other because we have the same practice. For me, it really helps to center myself and to feel like I'm in alignment with who I am and what I need to be doing. And I think as a creative, my mind is always filled with the next idea or soaking up inspiration or keeping my eyes open and being like very aware of what's going on around me. And also there's so many design decisions that you make and so many like admin things that you have to go through as an entrepreneur and running a business. And I think I need this time in the mornings to just not be thinking and not be having...
Not having decision fatigue early in the day. Yeah.
And I think it's also great to let your mind just like train your mind to let go. Because I feel like in this entrepreneurial journey, there's so much chasing.
Yeah.
And you're so hungry and you're pushing and you're overexerting yourself. And you need to like come back to yourself.
I'm going through that right now.
So good.
I was just on a go, 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 go. And then my voice was like, hey, shut up and listen to
yourself.
Enough
from you. Yeah.
But it's so important that you're saying that. And I guess as an artist, you feel guilty for taking time to rest.
You do. You feel like you need to, you have something to give and you need to keep giving or putting it out there.
Yeah.
Or, especially when you own a business, like proving yourself,
proving
to others that you are worthy of having the space in this, for me, design landscape, or proving to yourself that you made the right decision to start a business, to like not have a salary.
Totally.
That is not easy.
Cool. And for you, Mandisi, what is the one small habit that really impacts your creativity that you do daily?
I think I can relate to what you're saying fully. I think taking care of my health, what I eat, and exercising, going for walks. You know, it goes back to what you were saying and just not think about not listening to music, which I find it difficult of late because, like you were saying, you get yourself where you're on autopilot.
Yeah.
You know, you got these goals.
Yeah.
So now you're like just...
You're going.
You're just flowing.
And
there needs to be a time where you... Yeah. There needs to be a time where you just have to stop and say, oh, wait. You know, I think going for walks... And then going for, you know, solo dates. Got to listen to music. I love going out and watch live music and supporting other artists, exercising. And that's very important for me. First thing in the morning, go and exercise.
Yeah.
And
that feels personal. You're looking at me in such a way.
No, please.
Take notes.
It's more.
It's a mental thing.
You know, it's not really like about it's not a physical thing. It helps. It, of course, your body benefits from it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is to pick up my guitar and just sit in my balcony and just play. That helps my creativity. And because I'm not really, when I'm doing that,
You're not creating for something.
And then it will spark an idea if it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. You know, so.
That's so good. Yeah, I think there seems to be this general hustle culture.
Yeah.
And I think it is often when you've taken the step to start your own thing that you kind of feel like you don't deserve rest. And I know that I think that's a thing across the board, whether you are in a 9-to-5 or not. But, I think it's a bigger culture thing. But especially when you kind of have the privilege of doing your own thing. Now you think you need to, hustle to make it work. But burnout is like a real thing, especially when you're kind of doing everything in the business yourself.
Wearing all the hats.
And the mental load of it. So it's great that you've both got these almost like disciplines that keep you healthy and able to create.
I think what I'm to sum it up, because when we started this conversation, is how do you define your brand and what is your brand? And I'm learning that it's not necessarily one thing that defines your brand, but
it's like not just having a logo or something like that.
So what I'm getting from what both of you have said is that it's also your personal stance to the world. What is your message to the world? And what is the thing that drives you to exist just as a human being in the world that then determines what you do in your art? That's, your message to the world, whether it comes through music or through product design, but it's very linked to your spirituality and who you are as a person first. Like you can't separate you from your art or your brand.
Absolutely.
For 30 years, the V&A Waterfront has been a champion of the arts. Our Immersive Artist Alliance program offers hands-on experience and skills development across various disciplines, including sculpture, videography, and music production. Exclusive networking events and creativity workshops also provide more opportunities for artists to connect, collaborate, and showcase their work. Sound like your kind of thing? Apply to join our vibrant community at the link in the show notes and join our WhatsApp community. We'd love to welcome you.
So you will have heard at the end of some of our episodes that we ask you to like and subscribe. The reason that we're doing that is because we would love you to be part of our growing Creative Allies community. And by liking and subscribing, it shows that you firstly like us, which is good, right?
Very good. Very good. I like to be liked. I like liking other people too.
There we go. And it also means that any new episodes or any new snippets will download to your phone immediately. So go on and hit that subscribe button.
Like, follow, share, subscribe, everything.
So part of each episode, we have sourced some questions from the Artist Alliance community. These questions come from an event that happened a couple of months ago. So these are our listeners, hopefully in the future, but young creatives who've had these questions. So I am going to pick one and then I'm going to pose it to both of you. And let's just have a quick fire round. Give us your thoughts. And this is going to take you back a little while. But the question is, how do you find your niche while doing an entry level job? From the sound of it, both of you did not start where you are right now. So how did you develop your niche while you were starting out your career?
I think for me, the most important thing was being comfortable and not create from a place of being desperate, you know, and as a creative, you never want to do that. At least for me, that's my feeling, because Quincy Jones has said that the magic disappears once you start thinking about money or you're thinking about surviving. And I think I lived by that because I had 9-to-5s so that I don't have to make music
for survival,
make music that everybody else is making. I was just doing it because I love it, which I still do. And my thing was, I love this. And I want to share it with people, and up to a point where obviously then you build a business around it just so you can have structure, and that teaches you a lot along the way. But the most important thing for me was to really come in as myself and not be deterred by the industry or be pulled, you know. So that really helped me develop leverage and develop a voice. And for instance, now when I get booked, when I get people want to collaborate, it's because they want me to share some of what I have instead of just saying, okay, yeah, we just want a producer. We just want somebody to perform. And for me, what helped me develop that was having a secured 9-to-5. And it's something that we don't talk about a lot, because when we get into businesses, when you want to start a business as an entrepreneur, or you want to become an artist or designer for that matter,
we glamorize
struggling.
That's a big one.
As a
struggling artist, I think we've spoken about
it's truly detrimental. I think,
and kind of thinking you're a sellout if you have a nine to five.
It's detrimental because you know you have to find every possible way to feed yourself and sustain yourself so that your art is not what you do for that, because art is not for you to survive. Of course it is for you to survive, because you know,
in a spiritual sense,
I cannot not do music. I cannot not make music. Like I can't imagine a world where I'm not making music, where I'm not performing, when I'm not DJing. Can't imagine doing that.
I suppose what you're saying, it's a medium that you can't force.
No.
Like if there's no song today, there's no song. And so if you are living according to the song has to pay me for my survival and there is no song, then you're in a dangerous.
Also want to point out, this is my way. This is how I've developed myself to get to where I am. There's so many ways in which you can get. Someone would come to you and say, oh yeah, I'll invest this much and this much for you. Therefore, this is what I expect of you. There's so many ways. You have to decide why you are making music, why you are doing this. Because we do music for different reasons. Some of them are doing it because they love this sound that's coming out. They want to be part of that. Mm. And then some of them, they see the money that comes. And there's no right or wrong way. Yeah. There's what's right for you, what matters to you, what it is that you want to do. What's your ultimate goal? Is it aligned with that? Is it aligned with yourself? Does it make you go to sleep at night? And all of these things. Is it sustainable for you? Or you just... It depends. You have to decide what exactly you want to do. Where do you see yourself? How do you fit in with all of this? And then decide what is right for you. But because at the end of the day, you're the one who's going to live with it.
And you have to also live with your own decisions.
Exactly.
Yeah. Risita, how about you? Any thoughts on that question?
Yeah, I think so. When I was a graphic designer, I was working on other brands, building other brands. A lot of it was small businesses, and we would develop their whole like journey from start to finish, like how they progress. And I think while doing that, I felt like I'm investing so much time in other people's brands and helping them build their journey and helping them build a business. And I felt like after my 7 years there, the company, I felt like I'm able to do that for myself.
So it's almost like an education.
Yes.
Yeah, in how to do that.
Exactly. Mm. And I saw how empowering it was for those businesses. And so I think in my free time or out of work time, those are things that fueled me. And I think you have to kind of dig deep into yourself and think about the things that make you who you are, like your cultural lens, your personal spiritual beliefs, your childhood influences, like those things you have to explore outside of work if you've got a job, so that you can start developing a niche or like find where what excites you lies. I think if you're trying to do both, start a business while having a 9-to-5, there is some separation. You'll have like crossover lessons, things feed into each other.
I suppose also having a 9-to-5 helps you with structuring and in a business sense, because you might not have the time to then go and study business because that's a whole other medium. But through a 9-to-5 and watching
how
businesses run, that's the information that you're gathering for your own personal brand. So it works in tandem sometimes. And it's valuable knowledge that you can only get by working for big corporates and stuff like that. And when the time is right for you and when you've decided what you want to do, you can start to separate yourself and work on your own thing.
Yes, and kind of not be shooting in the dark completely. Like it is very overwhelming to start your own thing.
Yeah.
But at least when you have some knowledge from your previous experience. How I used to see it, so I was doing a lot of freelance work when I started a business, and I saw myself as my own investor. That's how I framed it for myself. That shifted the dynamic completely, because instead of being like, oh, I have to like do these things, it was like, oh, I'm investing in this idea that I really want to see happen.
I want to steal that.
That's smart.
I want to take that. I'm my own investor.
I'm my own investor. And also because often in those phases, you work really hard.
Yeah.
I was working really, really hard and for not a lot of money a lot of the time. Yeah, I mean, I was fine, but you know what I mean? It wasn't like for
but the value
and
was
fortune.
In doing the work.
Totally. But the value was in doing the work. And then also, bootstrapping something, starting something from scratch is a lot of hard work. But if you see all the different things that you do, whether that's a 9-to-5 or freelance work or whatever, if you see that as an investment into this thing that you really believe in, I think that totally shifts the dynamic of how you think about it. So
before we wrap up, we asked you to do a little exercise to write a letter to your younger self and give your younger self or tell your younger self the things that you wanted to hear then. Risita, you seem ready. I will start with your...
It's an actual letter.
She put it in an...
Guys, this is the cutest thing.
And
with
it's got
stickers.
A gold heart with stickers.
And
it's pink.
Bright pink paper.
So I first read the challenge wrong. I thought it was channeling your inner, like your younger self.
Okay.
And I was like, well, Then I am putting stickers.
Well, that's amazing.
So, and then I reread it, oh, and I was like, I'm just going to stick with it.
I love your stickers. That is the best. Yeah.
Okay, this will be a vulnerable moment. To Rosita, I'm sending you some gems from the future as you begin your career. There is no wrong timing or such a thing as starting your business too late. The universe has been preparing you, and now you are ready. There are no wrong decisions. Every path will lead you to a place where you're meant to learn something valuable. There is no perfect design. Everything is constantly changing and evolving. Embrace the things that make you different. It's your unique gift. And anyway, fitting into the mold is so boring. Embrace the unknown and uncertainties. Roller coasters are meant to be fun. Let your hair down, girl. The magic lies within you. I'm proud of you. You've already achieved more than you can imagine. XOXO.
Oh, yes.
Let your hair down. Let your hair down. That was beautiful. That was beautiful. Look at you. Look at you, older Rosita.
Thanks for the challenge.
Oh, wow.
Mandisi, what would you have said to your younger self?
Because I was very, what you call a kid that's very imaginative.
You had a big imagination.
Daydreamer.
Yeah, I was a very big daydreamer.
Aloof.
Yes,
it's called
aloof. I was a very much of that when I was a kid, you know. And I think what I would say is that keep doing that, because that really is a blueprint to where you need to be in life. And look at where you are now. It is because of that. And everything that happens to you is so that you become the person that you are today, and be grateful for everything that comes, whether good, bad, take, you know, and embrace it. That also, nothing lasts forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make the most of the experiences that you have. Yes.
I like that. I like
what I would say.
I think what I'm getting from it is, I'm not sure where the saying comes from. Possibly the Bible, because I grew up in a Christian family. So a lot of my encouragement, even though I don't identify as Christian anymore, but there's a saying that says everything is working for your good.
Yes.
So, and that's not only to say that you are having only good experiences, but even the experiences where you feel like, oh my goodness, the world is on top of me, I'm at the bottom, this is never going to work out. Those experiences are also working
exactly
for your highest self someday. And so we need to embrace those times where it seems like nothing is working out, and learn to be still, I suppose. And that, again, nothing lasts forever.
And that's beautiful, because you feel like you, no matter what's happening, you're always being supported.
Yeah.
Or you're always being guided to where you need to be.
Where you need to be. Thank you so much, Mandisi.
It's been a great conversation.
And Rosita, I always feel like I've learned something new every time we have, you know, different artists for these episodes, and no one's journey is the same. And I'm learning that, you know, we all should embrace our uniqueness, and that's actually how we define our brand, is by staying true to that thing that makes you a little weird.
Totally.
Yeah, be weird. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Mandisi and Rosita, for coming.
Thank you so much for having us. This has been such a fun experience, and so great to learn more about Digital Sangoma.
Likewise, I truly, truly appreciate being here and get the opportunity to share and connect with all three of you guys. And thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of Creative Allies, be sure to listen to other episodes in this series and hit subscribe so you don't miss any upcoming episodes. We speak with more inspiring guests about their career journeys and challenges, and give you valuable and practical advice. Listen to learn more about how to negotiate rates, manage your finances, deal with imposter syndrome, conquer creative blocks, and more. Remember, you can join our WhatsApp channel by clicking the link in the show notes. You can also subscribe to the Artist Alliance newsletter to get the latest news. Check the show notes for the link to our website. Thanks for listening. We look forward to next time.
See you next time.
Toodaloo.
Bye.
Bye.
The V&A Waterfront Artist Alliance program created the series in partnership with Two Stories, Podcast production by Carol Williams, with audio editing and engineering by Rebecca Van Zyl, and script writing by Linda Scarborough. The music for this series is composed by Jude Brown, and episodes are recorded at Sonic Nursery Sound Studios in Cape Town.